to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cups. Here's to this moment, it will never happen again.
This is Off Stage and On the Air, performance number 577. I am Lisa Sheps. I'm joined here in our pandemic mode, my lovely co-host, Miss Nicole Shiro. You are listening to us on KOOP HD1, HD3, Hornsby, streaming live at koop.org. During this pandemic, we are pre-recorded, folks. Do not go away.
Hurry, hurry, step right up. The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cup. Step right up. Feast your eyes on the wonders of this world.
It is Wednesday, August 12th. On the show today, we have an all-UT lineup. We have Mr. Bob Bercy, the new executive director of Texas Performing Arts. And later, we will be talking to Robert Ramirez and Charles O. Anderson, the leadership team at Texas Department of Theater and Dance. Stay with us. We'll talk to you after the song. What a lovely song that is.
I know.
And I know you love you some Kiss of the Spider Woman, which is what that is from.
I really do. I really, really do. I had some Raul Julia on the brain the other day.
Well, this is not Raul Julia. This is Brent Carver, who did the musical, as you say. And I keep forgetting, who was the writing team that wrote that musical?
That would be one Terrence McNally and Candor and Ebb.
Heard of them. Well, great. So I wrote that.
It might go somewhere.
Pardon me?
They might go somewhere, those people.
They may if they work at it. Sad to announce the death of Brent Carver at 68. He won a
Young.
Tom. Yes. And they're not sharing what he died of. So I'm not sure what it is. It literally says the cause of death was not specified. But he won a Tony in 1993 for Kiss of the Spider Woman. I did not even know he was in Kiss of the Spider Woman because I know you'll hate this, but the show's not on my radar all that much, and I've never seen it. But I think when I think of Brent Carver, I think of Parade, who he played Leo Frank in Parade on Broadway, which has since been replaced by the Donmar Warehouse version, which is the more standard version now. Our friend Scott Rudin was in the news. Did you read this?
Oh, this one made me laugh this morning. Yes,
God.
I saw it.
Well, what's amazing to me,
and
so
this isn't from COVID. This is from last fall.
This is pre-COVID.
He is
currently being sued by his ad agency, Spotco, saying that they owe him $6.3 million. But here's the interesting thing, and sort of shame on Spotco for this. They were working without a contract. There was no written contract at all. So I find that amazing. And Scott Rudin evidently had some very kind of shady practices in that he would ask them to do these ad buys and then he wouldn't pay them till the show closed. And it was sort of like pyramid scheme because the next set of money would pay for the next set of ad buys. Very, very, very shady. But then we should not expect anything less from Scott Rudin, right?
Mm-hmm. You said it.
Okay. We're almost out of time already, but I want to talk about, so there's a review of a online offering with an amazing cast. Did you see this, A Killer Party? You heard of it?
No. I've been in Egliff world. I have not seen it.
Well, it's a murder mystery, and it has some major stars in it. Including Alex Newell, your good friend, God, what's her name? No, I was going to say Kelly O'Hara, but it's not Kelly O'Hara. It's Laura Osnes. I don't know why I get those two confused, but I do. It also has Carolee Carmello, speaking of Parade, and a whole bunch of other people. It's an online murder mystery. It is happening right now. The first three episodes are out. And it's evidently got a really nice review based on what it is. And so Jesse Green did a review in the New York Times on it.
Interesting.
Yeah. And it has, oh, it also has, what's his name? I forgot his name. I love him.
What was he in?
He was in lots of things. So anyway, it says, so at one point, Jesse says, do not worry yourself trying to understand the plot in which MacArthur, too, has written a silly musical. This one is called Circus Steamboat Murd, Death on the High Seas Trapeze. The party guests have each been assigned a role in the show, and they arrive suitably, if rudimentarily, costumed for it. Laura Osnes plays Vivica Orson Welles, and she comes as a clown. So it seems kind of silly, kind of check your brains at the door. There will be a cast album that will drop on August 21st.
Oh, okay.
I know.
Who knew?
Oh, you know what? I want to play this.
A Killer Party, a new digital musical, and your new deadly obsession. In 9 episodes, you'll be begging to know who done it. Starring Christina Alabada, Jackie Burns, Carol Lee Carmella, Miguel Cervantes, Drew Galen, Jeremy Jordan, Alex Newell, Laura Osnes, Jared Spector, Michael James Scott, and Jessica Keenan-Wynn as they spend one night together singing, dancing, and solving a murder. So grab your notepad and follow along, because you're invited to A Killer Party.
And our last item before we go to break, I want to talk about there are two theaters that have been allowed by Equity to do shows. One is the Barrington Stage, the one-person show, which I forgot what it was called. It's in here somewhere. That had actually, now that they had to move outside to do their show, and Godspell. And there are two articles in the New York Times over the past few days. One talked about the show itself, and the other was the review. So the show itself, it's like there are plexiglass dividers between the actors that have to move around. The Equity decided that if an actor is downstage and another actor is upstage, that there has to be a physical barrier between them. I don't know. When I read this, it's like, I just don't know if I want to go and watch this, much less be involved in it.
No, it makes me feel uncomfortable in my chair, because where's my plexiglass to move around with?
Right. And the actors enter the stage with masks on, then they take them off to perform. But if they cross each other on stage, they bring their masks up for the cross. I know, it just seems like a lot of distraction. And it would be different to me that if this was like not in the COVID world, if they did some sort of wacky artistic reason for making these changes, but they're not. These are just practical reasons. But part of what this thing says is how thirsty we are for theater, and how during the rehearsal, one of the actors that played Jesus, as he was singing Beautiful City, broke down in tears just because of the sheer emotion of performing again. This is not during a show, it's during rehearsal. And then the director, one of the quotes that the director said was, you know, normally we would reach out and hug that person at that point, but they couldn't even do that. I just don't know. But the review was quite positive by Ben Brantley.
Yeah.
Did you read the review?
I read the review, and I read the article with the interview with Kate Schindel, talking about how we're showing actors can be on stage. We're showing that people want to come.
Well, they are sold out, which I find mm-hmm. interesting. These two shows are really a litmus test for the rest of the theater community. That being said, they are in sparsely populated areas of Massachusetts. So, and the Godspell cast is quarantined together.
Yes. I don't know.
It's very interesting. We don't have time to talk at length about it, but I wanted to like throw that out there. At offstageonair.com, you can check out the full articles yourself. So let's take a little break listening to a little song from Godspell.
I I can see a swath of sinners setting yonder and their acts.
We had some great interviews this week, and they're on the long side, but worthwhile hearing. So let's start by listening to Nicole and I talking to Bob Bursey. He's the executive director of Texas Performing Arts. That's for those of you that don't know this already. This is Texas Performing Arts runs all the theaters on the UT campus, including Bass Concert Hall, which hosts Broadway and Austin. So you ready to listen?
Yes.
Here it is. Well, let's climb out of the Zoom machine and see who we find here. Nicole, look, it's Bob Bursey, executive director of UT Texas Performing Arts. Hey, Bob, how are you?
Hey, I'm really well. Thanks so much for having me, Lisa and Nicole. It's great to be here with you guys.
You're quite welcome. What do you think of our Zoom machine? We decided to go for the red model with sparkles.
I think you guys are getting a lot of mileage out of it these days, and it is holding up great.
Earlier this year, you were named executive director of Texas Performing Arts. Mazel tov, as my people say. Tell us about that. Where'd you come from? What's your story?
Yeah, thank you so much.
Who are you, Bob?
Warm welcome. And for folks who are wondering, Texas Performing Arts is the organization that operates 5 theater venues on the UT Austin campus, probably best known for Bass Concert Hall, which is the big 2,900-seat flagship venue that's home to the Broadway and Austin series and lots of great programming all year round. And I came to Austin from Bard College, which is in the Hudson Valley, about an hour and a half outside of New York City, where I was running a performing arts center called the Fisher Center, which was really a producing organization, but very similar in its connection to higher education.
Well, you got a couple ex-New Yorkers here with you. Of course, Nicole was born in Jersey, but she spent a lot of time in the Hudson Valley.
I came out early on the weekend. I should have been born in the city, but I was like, I want a fist pump. But my mom's in upstate. My mom's in Schenectady, Albany area now.
Yeah. So Nicole wanted to spend a lifetime of trying to defend her home state. So that's why she chose New Jersey.
I love Jersey. I love everything about it.
You're one of a handful of people, so congratulations. So what? So you came on board to Texas Performing Arts, and as you mentioned, it's Bass Concert Hall, and it's 5 other wonderful stages. Y'all do some wonderful work out there with students and others. And I'm guessing that your plans for the organization sort of hit a block of sorts, so you had to switch gears. Is that correct? Would that be a fair assumption?
What would make you think that?
I can't.
Yeah, absolutely. So much of what I had imagined being able to dive into and do has certainly changed, right? The whole context for theater, performing arts, arts and culture, live performance in this country has just been completely upended in this time of what is quite frankly a crisis for our field. So it has been a lot of letting go of things and embracing what reality is and trying to find a really creative way forward to still deliver on what our mission is and what our value to the communities we serve can be in terms of connecting people to live performance in one way or another and supporting artists and audiences in our community.
Well, I'm curious. I want to get into what the upcoming plans for Texas Performing Arts is, but I'm curious, and feel free to say no. I'm just wondering, was there any program or new direction that you were planning on taking the organization that you've had to sort of put on hold, or something exciting that you would want to share with our audience?
Yeah, for sure. That's a great question. Thank you. You know, it has been about trying to find ways to move forward with things in different ways that you maybe hadn't imagined. So one of the real priorities for me is to connect the work of Texas Performing Arts to the research mission of UT Austin. UT Austin is an incredibly powerful source of new knowledge in the world. One of the most impressive and extensive research institutions in the country, certainly. And what role does the performing arts play in that? How is Texas Performing Arts contributing to the development of new knowledge? And I think in our field, that's about producing new work and giving artists, quite frankly, laboratory space to be able to create, develop, and test out new ideas. So that's something that I had hoped to do on a really significant scale. The pandemic has obviously caused us to curtail that a little bit, but I think that in some ways there's actually an opportunity there, and something that I'm really interested in for our field is, what is the art that's going to come out of this time? What is the theater that's going to emerge from this crisis? And also, how can we continue to invest what resources we do have in artistic process so that we're not faced with a drought of new work when we are able to gather back in theaters again?
Right. And I do think, I think our industry, I mean, I will say, and I'm sort of evangelical about this, that the base of theater will remain theater. It's about sitting shoulder to shoulder in an audience and that energy that comes between performers and that audience. I don't think we'll ever change. It's been done since the beginning of man. But I do believe that when this is all said and done, there's going to be, it will have changed the face of what we present as a whole. And I really appreciate, and I'm looking forward to when you're able to actually fully realize it. One of the things that's so great about the, is it's five theaters that you manage there at the university. And most citizens of Austin are really only familiar with Bass. And there's so much other work that happens in those other four theaters that is really worthwhile seeing. And I'm really hoping that becomes a vehicle for making a wider audience for the
Lisa
university.
And I still talk about the National Theatre of Scotland and a performance that we saw, which was not in the Bass. And you and I still talk about that production, yeah. Lisa,
they
3 years later.
So tell us about what you are doing currently and what the plans are. I mean, are the theaters closed until further notice? What's the official word these days?
Yeah, so the organization continues to operate, albeit in a very different way. Of course, we're not putting on any large-scale in-person events because clearly that is not appropriate to support the health and safety of the community right now. So we're offering some virtual events when I find things that I think are really interesting, more than just watching a movie, right? Or watching a previously recorded performance. And there's been a lot of great archival material and recorded performances that have come out. And I think that's really interesting and important and a great step forward for our field. And I want to go beyond that to support artists who are embracing online formats as part of the content and not only as part of the form of their work. So there are really interesting playwrights and directors and performers who are engaging with this new digital world of theater in exciting ways. And when there's opportunities for us to support that work, we want to do that and bring it forward. So that's been one focus for us. I have two young children, a 9-month-old and a 4-year-old.
Oh my.
So I'm really focused on the struggles that really everyone who is a caregiver of any kind is facing right now. So we're putting some resources and effort into bringing forward online events for families and young audiences, which I think will be really important over the next few months. And then we're asking ourselves, what can we do with these spaces, right? We're not going to shut down the organization. We have had to tighten our belt, but we want to go forward and continue to deliver on our mission. And what is the best way for us to do this, right? We have the largest theater in Austin. We have extensive shops and rehearsal studios and other venues on the campus. And what are the ways that we can use them differently and creatively to still support our community during this time? And we're about to announce a couple of really exciting initiatives around that, I think, in the next week or so.
That sounds amazing. I know on your website you have two events. One we talked about on our last week's show, which is Christopher Jackson, which both Nicole and I are very excited about. But you also have a trivia night that's coming up about women in the music of the 2010s. Tell us about that.
Yeah, you know, that's an initiative that really has been driven by members of our staff wanting to try to foster and maintain that sense of connection that you get from coming to the theater. For me, that's so much what it's about. It is seeing people and being able to engage with these art forms and incredible artists that we love. And so are there interesting ways that we can still try to do that during this time and maintain that sense of connection to our community and our audiences? And those online trivia nights, they've been incredibly popular. The staff does a great job with them, and that's been one thing that we've been able to do.
So I'm wondering if you can tell our audience, the winner of this particular one, which happens on August 12th at 7 p.m., gets a signed Broadway poster from a past Broadway and Austin show. Can you tell us what show that is and who signed it?
No, I cannot. That is for the winner alone to find out.
Bummer. Well, we're almost running out of time. I want to just take the last few minutes that we have with you, and I hope you come on again, because I feel we've just scratched the surface here with you, which is a technical term, to talk about the 2021 season for Broadway in Austin. It looks like a pretty good season. Nicole and I talked about the season that just got sort of upended, which we were very excited about. And some of the things are still on here and some have changed a little bit. Do you want to talk a little bit about the season?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's really interesting how Broadway is trying to adapt and respond as a field during this time. So a lot of the 2021 Broadway and Austin season was in place when I arrived. I was able to exercise some influence on the choice of productions that would come to Austin. And my focus was really on great new musicals coming out of New York. So what we would call first run national tours, where a show has recently closed on Broadway, or maybe is even still running on Broadway, and it's going to come to Austin as part of its first national tour, because Austin is an increasingly important theater city nationally. And I want that to be reflected in our programming. That has proven to be a little bit of a disadvantage, unfortunately, in moving shows around due to the closure, because it takes a lot more effort to get those new musicals up and running. So, for instance, shows that were planning to go out on the road in 2021, they're having to probably move their timelines because they need to be casting now, they need to be getting their sets built, they need to be rehearsing and getting ready to go. And it's just not possible to safely do that. So the existing tours have a little bit lower barrier to entry, and those are some of the pieces that we've been juggling in terms of things that have already shifted in our schedule, and then maybe other shifts that we're anticipating probably in the future.
Great. Well, for our listeners, currently the season as announced is Tootsie, To Kill a Mockingbird, Mean Girls, Wicked, Hadestown, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, and Summer, the Donna Summer musical. Many of those I'm very excited to see. Some of them I've seen probably too many times. But I love the season. We're very excited. And I am thrilled that, and I don't know whether that's something that you did or was done elsewhere, but you know, we in Austin, I've been here for almost 20 years, and we've always felt like we've been getting the B shows. We've been getting the second nationals and the third nationals, and now we're starting to get the first nationals. And I think that's wonderful.
I think we saw the shift in the last season or so is when you and I, the last season and a half is when Lisa and I really saw the shift go. And we just hit a million people. We're one of the only 10 cities or 11 cities in the U.S. now. We actually hit a million people in Austin proper just recently.
Yeah. Well, so that means I can't move away.
That's right. Yeah, that's exactly right. And Texas Performing Arts in 2019 was the most attended theater in Austin, and it was the second most attended in the entire state of Texas for venues of our sizes. So not only is there an incredible community in Austin, they really love to come out and experience these shows. That certainly does help us to bring in the best of the best.
Awesome. Well, Bob Bercy, thank you so much for joining us here at Offstage You on the Air. I hope it's not the first time. Not the last time. It is the first time.
It better not be the last time.
Thank you guys so much for having me.
Thank you. Oh, at Bob Bercy. I hope we get him back on the show live sometime.
He's giggling. He had a lot of fun. I had a lot of fun with him, too.
Me, too. Well, now we have to take a little break. And when we come back, we'll have the second half of the show where we talk to Robert Ramirez and Charles O. Anderson. Do not touch that dial. We are back. You're listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa.
And Nicole.
Yeah, I always like throw you a different way to do that. And it always, you go, oh, I'm supposed to do something here. So here's what I want to talk about. We have 6 minutes to talk about stuff. We had mentioned before the show, you were telling me that while we were recording this, and we should tell folks we're recording this on Monday, that Philippa Sue was being interviewed on the Today Show. And I'm assuming you had the sound off so you couldn't see it, hear it.
I had it so light, it just sounded like peanut parents.
So, yes. I want to talk about the gasp at the end of Hamilton. There's so many theories about it, and Philippa Sue, who created it, is the only one that is that knows for sure, and she's not talking about it. Well, of course, and Lin-Manuel.
I was like, Lin's been in on it.
Yes, I've seen him. Well, and the cast, I assume, but she's the one that evidently has the right to say what it really is or not. And of all the things that I've heard, the first one I heard, and now I have to agree that that's probably what it is, and I don't like it, that at the end of the show that Lin-Manuel is not coming up to Eliza as Hamilton, but as Lin-Manuel Miranda, and he leads her down to the stage, and she looks up and sees the audience, and that's them saying that they've told her story, and that's what causes the gasp.
That's what I got from it.
I did not get that. I perceived it. I have to say that the first time I saw the show in Chicago was the best gasp I ever saw, because it actually took me by surprise. I knew nothing about it. I wasn't warned that it was going to happen. And it was a very simple intake. And then the lights went out. And I went, oh my God, that was magic. And I don't know why it affected me the way it did. And then Philippa Sue's is more like a wail, a cry, which I did not get until the other day. And I will try to put a link on this. There's a YouTube where they put together like 8 different Elizas doing it, the last piece, and you see 8 different gasps. None of them was the Eliza I saw in Chicago, but it's interesting that this has caused so much. I wish people could see the video. Nicole clearly does not care.
No.
Well, I do, only because in the first one I saw, it was such an amazing moment. It really was. Oddly enough, in the last second of the play, it was the moment that I remembered the most in Chicago. But it was never in any other time I've seen it, which is twice. It hasn't been that way. So, we had a wonderful conversation with Robert Ramirez, who's the head of UT Theater and Dance. And I learned that on the interview. I thought he was the interim, but he's been named permanent. And the second in line, Charles O. Anderson. And it was a great interview, wasn't it?
I could have stayed on with them all afternoon. They were great.
Me too. Well, let's give it a listen. Oh my God, Nicole, we are Zooming so much. Let's open the door.
Hold on, let me take my helmet off.
Take your helmet off, because I think there's breathable air out there. Can you go ahead and open the door for us? Awesome, look who we see. It's Robert Ramirez and Charles O. Anderson from the UT Department of Theater and Dance. Hi, you guys.
Hey.
Hello.
I should say that for our audience, Robert is the interim chair of the UT Department of Theater and Dance.
I'm actually the chair now.
I was in April, right?
Gotta change the Google. So congratulations, the chair. Charles O. Anderson, if everything stands correct, you're the head of the dance program. Is that correct?
And the associate chair of the Department of Theater and Dance.
And the associate chair. Awesome.
It's happened during COVID.
I feel like I'm in with royalty, and I know that Charles, and you and I haven't spent a whole bunch of time together, but I know when, for some reason, Robert, I just love any time I'm able to spend any time with you.
Likewise, likewise.
So when we're able to socially non-distance, you and I are going to have to go get cocktails.
Absolutely, absolutely.
So here's what I want to talk about in general for our audience to get to the meat of the subject. I'm not sure if you guys are aware of it, but we're in the middle of this global pandemic that's going on right now. Oh, have y'all heard of it? The coronavirus?
I've heard tell.
True. Anyway, and what's UT doing about opening in general? And specifically, when you talk theater and dance, those are very intimate disciplines that don't really work well on Zoom. So what's the buzz?
Yeah.
What's happening?
Yeah. Well, we'll start by saying it's a continuously unfolding plan, right? Unfolding and ever changing situation. And, you know, and Charles and I, you know, we've just been talking and endlessly, it feels like, for months now about getting ready, you know, for this, along with all of our colleagues. And, you know, I feel super fortunate in that Charles is not just my colleague and my friend, but also an artistic collaborator. We've made work together. And so it's been really great to have someone that I trust so much to sort of hold hands as we move through this. So basically, you know, what we're attempting is to create a series of what we're calling digital packages for each of the shows in the season. And what those will be comprised of are a reading that's been recorded live, along with a series of design presentations, right? Intentions, you know, presentations around what the original intention was for the design concept, dramaturgical work, director's notes, some community outreach focuses, interviews with the cast, with the director, with the artistic team. And, you know, we're in the initial stages right now planning with each of those teams what each of those specific packages are going to look like for each of the shows. What we're trying to do is really honor the fact that, you know, so much of our work is student generated. Our design teams are made up by our brilliant graduate students in live design, and as are our dramaturgical teams and our community outreach teams. The bulk of our directors, right, are our graduate directors, and then we've got students who are cast in the shows. And really right now allowing them to come to the table and bring their ideas for what they foresee or what they would like this package to look like per se, right? Mm-hmm. And then weighing that against budgetary concerns, figuring out from there what that thing is going to look like. And, you know, it's just been an interesting, and I use interesting in lieu of a lot of other words I could use. It's been an interesting process. To really be in this uncharted territory. I mean, you know, we're Charles and I were talking about this yesterday. He and I are performers and makers that deal in live interaction, right? Like, I'm an actor, Charles is a dancer, and the reading of energy and the reading of a room and how things land and whether it landed or not, and then what direction I've got to take it in physically to really make this thing get up off the ground. And so it has been kind of wild, you know, to start making forays into new avenues for how we might tell these stories. And we're all there, right? I know you're there at your theater, and every other maker in Austin is there. The world, really, you know. And that's the really weird thing to put it into perspective, you know. It's like, it's not just us.
No.
This is the globe, which is crazy.
Right. And to call it interesting times is, I wouldn't say it's an understatement. I think it's the perfect word, because they're fascinating times. There's good and bad and everything. So are the students physically going to be coming to campus this fall?
Well, the university we're on a opening in a hybrid form, right? So we've got a bunch of different ways in which that's manifesting. We are primarily going to be online, I would say. and you could interpret primarily a number of different ways, and it kind of varies from class to class and production to production. Some of the productions, you know, the actors will be working remotely and filmed, and in some instances they'll be reading live in the same space with each other, but socially distanced and masked. This is all going to take place in a number of different ways. I think what it presents is a lot of really exciting possibilities to sort of present the work in a kind of experiential way that none of us have been able to before. And yeah. And I think a really great example of that is Charles' piece, Recurrent Unrest, which was originally slated to be part of our fall dance concert. But, you know, because we have to plan everything so far out in advance, you know, one of the upsides of the COVID crisis has been that looking at everything that's happened in America over the summer and deep into the spring, right, was we had this really special opportunity to look at this piece specifically, which is directly addressing the political and social climate in America, and then move that to the front of the season. So we're able to do some things calendar-wise, right, that we haven't been able to do before, and which I think is a wonderful response, right, to where our students, where we as artists are, where the state of Texas is. And I let Charles expand on that.
Well, and I do want to say that I want to hear all about that. I have a quick question for Charles, but when we're talking about the season, how does a class in dance work remotely?
Mm-hmm.
I was just writing a long letter to her parent about that. I guess the simplest way to say it doesn't work the way we're used to it working. However, with the advent of TikTok and all of the social media platforms, I think our undergraduates are probably more adapted to this than we are, where what we, as Robert is saying, we are not intending to hold in-person classes, at least for the first half of the semester, because our partners, the floor, air, space, all of those things are working against us right now. So it's just not feasible or safe for us. But there will be some limited contact. A lot of our faculty have been teaching all over the world, actually via Zoom. So we feel ready.
Well, cool. It's really fascinating. I'm looking forward to hearing about it after the fact, once all this stuff calms down, and how all of this informs your future work as you move forward in all of our disciplines. So tell us about... Oh, go ahead, Nicole.
It was just making me think, as a performer, it's challenging, but it must make you really go outside of your box in a new way that you never have before. And then from the designer perspective, it's like the public is getting an inside look of a process and not just the finished picture that goes along with the performer. So there's kind of these two different elements that are exciting that have come out of it. I mean, just from both of you talking, I just started going, oh, wow. Oh, so that got me excited. Sorry, it was really, I guess, a statement more than a... I was just like, whoa.
No, it's absolutely great, because in some ways we're getting to focus on PR, because so much of this has to be recorded. It's like now we actually get to show what we do usually and place the focus on putting it out there for both the parents, the students, and the world to sort of check in with what goes down at UT.
Yeah. Well, I will say, just generally speaking, we the people are able to see stuff that we don't normally get to see because of this, because we're constantly taking our art and putting it online so that we can share it. And speaking of that, and I didn't mean to cut you off, I do want to hear about this piece. Is it Recurrent Unrest that we're talking about?
Yes, it is.
It looks amazing. I should tell folks, you can get a lot of information on Charles's website, which is charlesoanderson.me. Tell us about it.
Well, ironically, it's kind of how we met, because in 2018, Fusebox presented us, and one of my dancers, Johnny Mercer, ended up presenting his work at your theater. So ironically, Recurrent Unrest was supposed to start its big national tour this fall, thanks COVID-19. So that's not happening. So I've spent the summer doing all sorts of interesting fundraising and pivoting the project. So now what we're doing is an immersive dance film that'll tour virtually. Austin Chronicle did a little write-up on that. Mm-hmm. In case people are interested. But essentially what that means is that Bob Bursey has generously provided us with a filming residency, and we will be working with and engaging the undergraduate students as the cast of the work. And the piece is focused, it's clearly inspired by Black Lives Matter. More explicitly, it's a piece that's looking at the idea of authorship, legacy, and what it means to be an American within a Black body, using the Sonic Foundation of Steve Reich's music, which has a very interesting relationship to the civil rights movement, if anyone who knows his early work. It'll take place October 11th and 12th at Bass Hall. We'll be filming it. It'll be live streamed and presented nationally that way. So in New York, D.C., all over, we'll just do it. And then from that, we'll create this documentary that will be available to other academic institutions who would like to teach the work.
That is amazing. I actually can't wait to see it. We had talked before we went on the air about Johnny Mercer and that piece that he did. I remember how it affected me as a white person at the base of who I am, and how important of a work I thought that was. Mm-hmm. So, boy, we've talked a long time. I just have to talk about a couple things that really interest me. Actually, Charles, a lot of what I want to talk to you about was exactly that, and to point people to your website, because you are an amazing artist, and you can see it and feel it just by looking at that website, amongst other things. But Robert,
you have a good website to find and see all of that stuff.
And that website was created by an undergraduate student in the dance program. God bless her, Becky Nam. Thanks, Becky.
Boy, shout out to Becky. So, Robert, what does the phrase "musical theater magician" mean to you?
Oh God, musical theater magician.
Yes. Is that not you?
That is somebody else's website, which I found some time
ago. Oh my gosh!
I passed it out to a bunch of people. I was like, "Oh my god, I've been having a phantom career that I never knew about." It looks terribly fascinating.
Fascinating. Well, he was so I thought it was you because I was like so thrilled.
Wait, you need to meet each other now. This is hilarious.
Wouldn't it be amazing? Like, I always joke about how I've had like five different careers. That would be amazing if I had like one more, right?
Well, folks, you know that this Robert Ramirez was in the Second National Company of In the Heights, as well as he's a magician, and he was on Penn and Teller's Fool Us, where he did some kind of magic trick with an iPhone. I thought it was you.
Oh my god. Too bad you can't have him on your show.
No, we're going to make this meeting happen on the show. Lisa and I are going to bring you all together.
Well, that was, I was really hoping that was you, because that was so much fun. But you have an incredible pedigree yourself, if you don't mind me saying. And we are so happy to have you here. You are the head of you've got Vocal Coach of the Year, some crazy award about being a vocal coach, which is one of your hats that you wear. Is that correct?
Yeah, I've worn a lot of hats. Stepping into the position as chair has meant having to focus a lot more on my life in academia, certainly. And I think that'll be the big challenge for me as I move forward in my career at UT, right? How do I juggle my life as an artist with my life as an administrator and a teacher?
Yep.
Teaching and making are two of the things that I feel the most passionately about, you know? I don't see a future where I can ever step away from the classroom, and I don't see a future where I could ever fully step away from working with actors and directors and it, out in the world, you know. In the last several years since I got to Austin, I've been really lucky in that I've worked all over the country, right, as a vocal coach, as an actor, as a director. And like so many of us, you know, I had a big show that I was supposed to direct this summer that was slated for this summer that was cut. Charles and I both had a long list of projects that were cut due to financial constraints and travel limitations, et cetera. But yeah, and you know, working as a vocal coach has, I think, been with professional actors has been probably the best fodder for my classroom practice, you know, for what it is that I'm bringing to my students.
Sure. And you have a background that when you read your bio, and I read a couple of them in different places, it seems that Shakespeare was your focus. Is that basically true?
Yeah. My graduate degree, my MFA training was focused specifically on classics and on Shakespeare. And that's been the bulk of my performance experience, you know, at Shakespeare festivals and regional theaters, you know, across America and one tour in Europe.
Now I know you played the Delcourt Theater for the public. Did you not at Shakespeare in the Park?
I did, which was like, you know, my childhood dream. And then it happened. And I was like, every night I'd be like on that stage, just freaking out. You know, I had like three lines and I was like, God, I hope I get them right. Lord, you know, but it was so romantic, right? You know, this is thing, you think you're in high school and you're like, one day I'm going to do Shakespeare in the Park in New York City. And then you're a young kid in New York, you've just arrived and then you're doing it. And it was just, I think about that often and how lucky I was and fortunate and what a real gift that was, you know?
What show was it?
I was in Henry V and I,
with Kevin Kline?
No, with Andre Brouwer. With
wow, really?
You know, yes.
Yeah, and I'd just be up there every night in all this, you know, armor and chainmail and shit with Andre Brouwer, just like, oh, sorry, I cussed. Okay. Andre Brouwer, you know, yelling at me, on, you know, into the breach. It was really crazy. And then I was in Timon of Athens, which was...
Oh, you did a couple there.
Yeah, and you know, that was, I worked with so many brilliant actors, older actors who had been speaking Shakespeare collectively for like hundreds of years, right? And what I learned from that experience was just tremendous. And not just about speaking Shakespeare, but about what it meant to be a professional and what it meant to, I learned a lot, you know, I learned a lot about what I didn't know, really. You know, because you get
true.
And you're like, you're 20 nothing years old, and you're like, I know it all. And,
been there, been there.
And I'm going to take the city by storm. I'm going to be a star. You know?
Been there. Still there sometimes.
Still there sometimes.
Not, you know what? Never lose that part. You can't lose that part.
Yeah.
That's how we always learn and grow.
Well, Robert Ramirez and Charles O. Anderson, thank you so much for being on the show. I hope this isn't the last time y'all come on.
Oh, yes.
We could talk forever.
Please, let's do it.
Okay. Well, we're going to hop back in the machine and we'll see you next time.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having us.
Bye.
Awesome. Bye.
That's a great, great, great interview. We're going to have them on. And people really should. I kept talking about it, but Charles O. Anderson, his website is amazing. And he seems to be, I did see the work that he did at our theater, which was really took my breath away. It just seems like he's an amazing talent, and what a gift to Austin to have him at UT.
I agree.
Yep.
I definitely agree.
I wish I could go back to college. In college, you know who you are. You sit in the...
Well, we've done it. That's our show.
Dun, 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 dun. Dun, 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 dun.
Na 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 na. So remember, folks, like us on all the social media platforms that you want to like us on, and then listen to the podcast, right?
Yes, indeed. You can get us anywhere: Stitcher, iTunes, offstageonair.com. Just enter your email, and we'll get delivered into your mailbox each week.
Anywhere,
voila, we're there.
Anywhere at all. Folks, thanks so much for, and I want to remind everybody again that on Co-op on Saturdays at 8:30 is Overtures, a show tunes radio show. So that's a good thing. And it looks like Nicole wants to say something.
This Thursday, Robert Sims on Lights, Camera, Austin is interviewing one Norbert Leo Butz for a new movie he's working on.
Okay. I'm not jealous about that, but that's
well,
great.
A whole bunch
so
of Broadway
watch, listen to Robert Sims on Lights, Camera, Austin, Norbert Leo Butz, very famous Broadway actor. Great get for him. We will see you next week on Offstage and on the Air. Bye, folks.
There are drinks and girls all over London, and I gotta track them down in just a few more hours. I'm getting married in the morning. Ding dong, the bells are gonna chime.